poison them.
With what?
She threw up her hands.
Okay, so we set the hotel on fire and burn them all up.
That's a great idea, only we happen to be living here too.
Then they're gonna win. Against us.
A bunch of rats. I shook my head. I didn't follow her. Win how? Her eyes widened in disbelief. Ringer the moron.
Listen to them. They're eating it. And pretty soon, we won't be living here because there won't be any here to live in.
That's not winning, I pointed out. They wouldn't have a home either.
They're rats, Ringer. They can't think that far ahead.
Not just the rats, I thought that night after she finally fell asleep next to me. I listened to them inside the walls, chewing, scratching, screeching. Eventually, with the help of weather, insects, and time, the old hotel would collapse. In another 100 years, only the foundation would remain. In 1,000, nothing at all. Here or anywhere. It would be as if we had never existed. Who needs the kind of bombs used at Camp Haven when they can turn the elements themselves against us? Teacup was pressed tight against me. Even under mounds of covers, the cold squeezed hard. Winter. A wave they didn't have to engineer. The cold would kill off thousands more.
Nothing that happens is insignificant, Marika,
my father told me during one of my chess lessons.
Every move matters. Mastery is in understanding how much each time, every time.
It nagged at me. The problem of the rats. Not Teacup's problem. Not the problem with rats. The problem of rats.
Chapter 9. I see the choppers closing in through the leafless branches clothed in white, 3 black dots against the gray. I have seconds. Options. Finish Teacup and take my chances against 3 Black Hawks equipped with Hellfire missiles. Leave Teacup to be finished by them, or worse, saved. One last option. Finish both of us. A bullet for her, a bullet for me. I don't know if Zombie is okay. I don't know what, if anything, drove Teacup from the hotel. What I do know is our deaths may be his only chance to live. I will myself to squeeze the trigger. If I can fire the first round, the second will be much easier. I tell myself it's too late for her and too late for me. There's no avoiding death anyway. Isn't that the lesson they've been hammering into our heads for months? No hiding from it, no running from it. Put it off for a day and death will surely find you tomorrow. She looks so beautiful, not even real, nestled in a bower of snow, her dark hair shimmering like onyx, her expression in sleep the indescribable serenity of an ancient statue. I know that killing both of us is the only option with the least risk to the most people. And I think of rats again and how sometimes, to pass the interminable hours, Teacup and I would plot our campaign against the vermin, stratagems and tactics, waves of attack, each more ridiculous than the last, until she dissolved into hysterical laughter. And I gave her the same speech I gave Zombie on the firing range, the same lesson that now comes home to me. The fear that binds killer to prey, and the bullet connecting both as if by a silver cord. Now I am the killer and the prey. A circle of a completely different kind. And my mouth has gone dry as the sterile air, my heart as cold. The temperature of true rage is absolute zero. And mine is deeper than the ocean, wider than the universe. So it isn't hope that makes me slip the sidearm back into its holster. It isn't faith, and it sure isn't love. It's rage. Rage, and the fact that I have a dead recruit's implant still lodged between my cheek and gums. Chapter 10.
I lift her up. Her head falls against my shoulder. We take off through the trees. A Black Hawk thunders overhead. The other 2 choppers have split off, one to the east, one to the west, cutting off any escape. The high, thin branches bend. Snow whips sideways into my face.
teacup weighs nothing. I could be carrying a wad of discarded clothes. We come out of the trees as a black hawk roars in from the north. The blast of air whips my hair with cyclonic fury. The chopper hovers above us, and now we are motionless, standing in the middle of the road. No more running. No more. I lower teacup to the blacktop. The helicopter is so close I can see the black visor of the pilot and the open door to the hold and the cluster of bodies inside, and I know I'm in the middle of a half dozen sights, me and the little girl at my feet. And every second that passes means I've survived that second and, with each second, the increased probability I'll survive the next. It might not be too late, not for me, not for her, not yet. I do not glow in their eyepieces. I am one of them. I must be, right? I sling the rifle from my shoulder and slip my finger through the trigger guard. 2. The Ripping. Chapter 11. From the time I could barely walk, my father would ask me,
"Cassie, do you want to fly?"
And my arms would shoot over my head. "Are you kidding me, old man? Damn straight I want to fly." And he would grab my waist and toss me into the air. My head would snap back and I would hurtle like a rocket toward the sky. For an instant that lasted 1,000 years, it felt as if I'd keep flying until I reached the stars. I would scream with joy, that fierce roller coaster ride fear, my fingers clutching at clouds.
"Fly, Cassie, fly!"
My brother knew that feeling, too. Better than me because the memory was fresher. Even after the arrival, Dad was launching him into orbit. I saw him do it at Camp Ashpit a few days before Vosh showed up and murdered him in the dirt.
"Sam, my boy, do you want to fly?"
Lowering his voice from baritone to bass like an old-time carny hustler, though the ride he was selling was free and priceless. Dad, the launching pad. Dad, the landing zone. Dad, the tether that kept Sam's, and me, from hurtling into the nullity of deep space. A nullity himself now. I waited for Sam to ask. That's the easiest way to break horrible news. Also the lowest. He didn't ask, though. He told me.
"Daddy's dead."
A tiny lump beneath a mound of covers. Brown eyes big and round and blank like the teddy bears pressed against his cheek. "Teddy bears are for babies," he told me the first night at Hotel Hell. "I'm a soldier now." Burrowed in the bed next to his, another solemn, pint-sized soldier staring at me, the 7-year-old they call Teacup. The one with the adorable baby doll face and haunted eyes who doesn't share a bed with a stuffed animal. She sleeps with a rifle. Welcome to the post-human age. "Oh, Sam." I left my post by the window and sat beside the cocoon of covers swaddling him. "Sammy, I didn't know how..." He slugged me in the cheek with a balled-up, apple-sized fist. I never saw it coming, in both meanings of the phrase. Bright stars exploded in my vision. For a second, I was afraid he'd detached my retina. "Okay," rubbing my cheek. "I deserve that."
"Why did you let him die?"
he demanded. He didn't cry or scream. His voice was low and fierce, simmering with rage.
"You were supposed to take care of him."
"I didn't let him die, Sam's." My father bleeding, crawling in the dirt. "Where are you going, Dad?" And Vosh standing over him, watching my father crawl the way a sadistic kid might a fly that he's de-winged. Grimly satisfied. Teacup from her bed.
"Hit her again!"
Sam snarled at her.
"You shut up!"
"It wasn't my fault," I whispered, my arm wrapped around the bear.
"He was soft," Teacup said. "That's what happens when you go..."
Sam was on her in 2 seconds. Then it was all fists and knees and feet and dust flying from the blankets. And, "Dear God, there's a rifle in that bed." And I shoved Teacup away, scooped Sam into my arms, and held him tightly against my chest while he swung his arms and kicked his legs, spitting and gnashing his teeth,
and Teacup was shouting obscenities at him and promising she'd put him down like a dog if he ever touched her again. The door flew open and Ben burst into the room wearing that ridiculous yellow hoodie.
"It's cool," I shouted over the screaming. "I've got this."
"Cup, Nugget, stand down."
Like a switch being flipped, the minute Ben barked the order, both kids fell silent. Sam went limp. Teacup flopped against the headboard and folded her arms over her chest.
"She started it," Sam pouted.
"I was just thinking of painting a big red X on the roof," Ben said.
He holstered his pistol.
"Thanks, guys, for saving me the trouble."
He grinned at me.
"Maybe Teacup should bunk in my room until Ringer gets back."
"Good,"
Teacup said. She jumped out of bed, marched to the door, turned on her heel, went back to the bed, grabbed the rifle, and yanked on Ben's wrist.
"Let's go, zombie."
"In a minute," he said gently.
"Dumbo's on the watch. Take his bed."
"My bed, now."
She couldn't resist a parting shot.
"A-holes."
"You're the a-hole,"
Sammy shouted after her. The door slammed in that quick, violent way of hotel doors.
"A-hole."
Ben looked at me, right eyebrow cocked.
"What happened to your face?"
"Nothing."
"I hit her,"
Sammy said.
"You hit her?"
"For letting my daddy die."
Now Sam lost it. As in tears, not fists, and the next thing I knew, Ben was kneeling and my baby brother was crying in his arms, and Ben was saying,
"Hey, it's okay, soldier. It's going to be okay."
Stroking the crew cut I was still getting used to, Sammy just didn't seem like Sammy without the mop of hair, saying that dumbass camp name over and over. Nugget. Nugget. I knew it shouldn't, but it bothered me that everyone had a nom de guerre but me. I liked defiance. Ben picked him up and deposited him in the bed. Then he found Bear lying on the floor and placed him on the pillow. Sam knocked him away. Ben picked him up again.
"You really want to decommission Teddy?"
he asked.
"His name isn't Teddy."
"Private Bear?" Ben tried.
"Just Bear, and I never want to see him again."
Sam yanked the covers over his head.
"Now go away, everybody, just go away."
I took a step toward him. Ben tisked at me and jerked his head toward the door. I followed him out of the room. A large shadow hulked by the window down the hall. The big, silent kid named Poundcake, whose silence did not fall into the creepy category, more like the profound stillness of a mountain lake variety. Ben leaned against the wall, hugging Bear to his chest, mouth slightly open, sweating despite the freezing temperature. Exhausted after a tussle with a couple of kids, Ben was in trouble, which meant we all were.
"He didn't know your dad was dead,"
he said. I shook my head. "He did and he didn't. One of those things."
"Yeah," Ben sighed. "Those things."
A lead ball of silence the size of Newark dropped between us. Ben was absently stroking Bear's head like an old man strokes a cat while reading the newspaper. "I should go back to him," I said. Ben sidestepped to the door, blocking my way.
"Maybe you shouldn't."
"Maybe you shouldn't poke your nose into—"
"Not the first person in his life to die. He'll deal."
"Wow, that was harsh."
"We're talking about the guy who was my father too, zombie boy."
"You know what I meant."
"Why do people always say that after they say something totally cruel?"
Then I said it because I may have certain issues with self-editing.
"I happen to know what it's like to deal with death all by yourself. Just you and nothing else but the big empty of where everything used to be. It would have been nice, really, really nice to have had someone there with me."
"Hey," Ben said softly.
"Hey, Cassie, I didn't—"
"No, you didn't. You really didn't."
Zombie. Because he didn't have feelings, dead inside like a zombie? There were people at Ashpit like that. Shufflers, I called them. Human-shaped sackfuls of dust. Something irreplaceable had crumbled inside. Too much loss. Too much pain. Shuffling, blank-eyed, slack-jawed mutterers. Was that Ben? Was he a shuffler? Then why did he risk everything to rescue Sam?
"Wherever you were," Ben said slowly,
We were there too. The words stung. Because they were true and because someone else said practically the same thing to me. You're not the only one who's lost everything. That someone else suffered the ultimate loss. All for my sake. The cretin who must be reminded, again, that she's not the only one. Life is full of little ironies, but it's also pockmarked with some the size of that big rock in Australia. Time to change the subject. Did Ringer leave? Ben nodded. Stroke. Stroke. The bear was bugging me. I tugged it from his arms.
I tried to send Poundcake with her, he said.
He laughed softly. Ringer. I wondered if he was aware of how he said her name. Quietly. Like a prayer. You know we have no backup plan if she doesn't come back.
She'll come back, he said firmly.
What makes you so sure?
Because we have no backup plan.
Now an all-out full smile, and it's disorienting, seeing the old smile that lit up classrooms and hallways and yellow school buses overlaid on his new face, reshaped by disease and bullets and hunger. Like turning a corner in a strange city and running into someone you know.
That's a circular argument, I pointed out.
You know, some guys might feel threatened being surrounded by people smarter than they are, but it just makes me more confident.
He squeezed my arm and limped across the hall to his room. Then it's the bear and the big kid down the hall and the closed door and me in front of the closed door. I took a deep breath and stepped inside the room. Sat beside the lump of covers. I didn't see him, but knew he was there. He didn't see me, but knew I was there.
How did he die?
Muffled voice buried. He was shot.
Did you see?
Yes. Our father crawling, hands clawing the dirt.
Who shot him?
Vosh. I closed my eyes. Bad idea. The dark snapped the scene into sharp focus.
Where were you when he shot him?
Hiding. I reached to pull down the covers. Then I couldn't. Wherever you were. In the woods somewhere off an empty highway, a girl zipped herself up in a sleeping bag and watched her father die again and again. Hiding then, hiding now, watching him die again and again.
Did he fight?
Yes, Sam. He fought very hard. He saved my life.
But you hid.
Yes. Crushing bear against my stomach.
Like a big fat chicken.
Not like that, I whispered. It wasn't like that. He slung the blankets aside and bolted upright. I didn't recognize him. I'd never seen this kid before. Face ugly and twisted by rage and hate.
I'm going to kill him. I'm going to shoot him in the head.
I smiled. Or tried to, anyway. Sorry, Sams. I have dibs. We looked at each other, and time folded in on itself. The time we had lost in blood, and the time we had purchased in blood. The time when I was just the bossy big sister, and he was the annoying little brother. The time when I was the thing worth living for, and he was the thing worth dying for. And then he crumpled into my arms, the bear smushed between us the way we were trapped between the before time and the after time. I lay down next to him, and together we said his prayer. If I should die before I wake. And then I told him the story of how Dad died. How he stole a gun from one of the bad guys and single-handedly took out 12 silencers. How he stood up to Vosh, telling him, "You can crush our bodies, but never our spirit." How he sacrificed himself so I could escape to rescue Sam from the evil galactic horde. So one day Sam could gather the ragtag remnants of humanity and save the world. So his memories of his father's last moments aren't of a broken, bleeding man crawling in the dirt. After he fell asleep, I slipped out of bed and returned to my post by the window. A strip of parking lot, a decrepit diner, all-you-can-eat Wednesdays. And a stretch of gray highway fading into black. The earth dark and quiet, the way it was before we showed up to fill it with noise and light. Something ends. Something new begins. This was the in-between time. The pause. On the highway, Beside an SUV that had run into the median strip, starlight glinted off the unmistakable shape of a rifle barrel, and for a second, my heart stopped. The shadow toting the gun darted into the trees, and I saw the shimmer of jet black hair, glossy and perfectly, annoyingly straight, and I knew the shadow was Ringer. Ringer and I didn't start off on the right foot, and the relationship just went downhill from there. She treated everything I said with a kind of icy contempt, like I was lying or stupid, or just crazy. Especially when Evan Walker came up. Are you sure? That doesn't make any sense. How could he be both human and alien? The hotter I got, the colder she got, until we canceled each other out like either side of a chemical equation. Like E equals MC squared, a kind of chemical equation that makes massive explosions possible. Our parting words were a perfect example. You know, Dumbo I get, I told her. The big ears. And Nugget, because Sam is so small. Teacup, too. Zombie I don't get so much, Ben won't say. And I'm guessing Pound Cake has something to do with his roly-poliness. But why Ringer? Her answer was an icy stare. It makes me feel a little left out. You know, the only gang member without a street name?
Nom de guerre. She said.
I looked at her for a minute. Let me guess. National Merit Scholar, chess club, math team, top of your class. And you play an instrument, maybe a violin or cello, something with strings. Your dad worked in Silicon Valley and your mom was a college professor, I'm thinking physics or chemistry. She didn't say anything for a couple thousand years. Then she said, anything else? I knew I should stop. But I was in now, and when I go in, I go all the way in. That's the Sullivan way. You're the oldest. No, an only child. Your dad is a Buddhist, but your mom is an atheist. You were walking at 10 months. Your grandmother raised you because your parents worked all the time. She taught you Tai Chi. You never played with dolls. You speak 3 languages. One of them is French. You were on the Olympic development team, gymnastics. You brought home a B once, and your parents took away your chemistry set and locked you in your room for a week, during which time you read the complete works of William Shakespeare. She was shaking her head. Okay, not the comedies. You just couldn't get the humor. Perfect, she said. That's amazing. Her voice was as flat and thin as a piece of aluminum foil fresh from the roller. Can I try you? I stiffened up a little, bracing myself. You can try. You've always been self-conscious about your looks, especially your hair. The freckles are a close second. You're socially awkward, so you read a lot, and you've kept a journal since middle school. You had only one close friend, and your relationship was codependent, which means every time you fought with her, you slid into a deep depression. You're a daddy's girl, never that close to your mother, who always made you feel like no matter what you did, it wasn't good enough. It didn't help that she was prettier than you. When she died, you felt guilty for secretly hating her and for being secretly relieved that she was gone. You're stubborn and impulsive and a little hyper, so your parents enrolled you in something to help with your coordination and concentration, like ballet or karate, probably karate. You want me to go on? Well, what was I going to do? I saw only 2 options, laugh or punch her in the face. Okay, 3. Laugh, punch her in the face, or give back one of her own stoic stares. I opted for 3. Bad idea. Okay, Ringer said. You're not a tomboy, and you're not a girly girl. You're in that gray area in between. Being an in-between meant you always secretly envied the ones who weren't, but you saved most of your resentment for the pretty girls. You've had crushes, but never a boyfriend. You pretend you hate boys you like and like boys you hate. Whenever you're around someone who's prettier or smarter or better than you in any way, you get angry and sarcastic because they remind you of how ordinary you feel inside. Go on. And Tiny voiced me. Sure, whatever. Until Evan Walker came along, you had never even held a boy's hand, except on elementary school field trips. Evan was kind and undemanding and, as an added bonus, almost too beautiful to look at. He made himself an empty canvas you could paint with your longing for a perfect relationship with the perfect guy who would ease your fear by never hurting you.
He gave you all those things you imagined the pretty girls had that you never did, so being with him, or the idea of him, was mostly about revenge. I was biting my lower lip. My eyes burned. I clenched my fists so hard my nails were biting into my palms. Why, oh why, didn't I go with option two? She said, "You want me to stop now?" Not a question. I lifted my chin. "And defiance shall be my nom de guerre."
"What's my favorite color?"
"Green."
"Wrong, it's yellow."
I lied. She shrugged. She knew I was lying. Ringer, the human wonderland.
"Seriously, though, why Ringer?"
That's it. Put her back on the defensive. Well, she never actually was on the defensive. That would be me. "I'm human," she said.
"Yeah."
I peeked through the crack in the curtains to the parking lot 2 stories below. Why did I do that? Did I really think I'd see him standing there, lurker that he was, smiling up at me? "See, I said I'd find you." Someone else told me that too, and like a dummy, I believed him. Not so dumb, given the circumstances. Oh, now she was being kind? Now she was cutting me some slack? I didn't know which was worse, Ice Maiden Ringer or Compassionate Queen Ringer.
"Don't pretend," I snapped. "I know you don't believe me about Evan."
"I believe you. It's his story that doesn't make sense."
Then she walked out of the room. Just like that. Right in the middle, before anything was resolved. Who, besides every male person ever born, does that?
A virtual existence doesn't require a physical planet. Who was Evan Walker? Shifting my eyes from the highway to my baby brother and back again. Who were you, Evan Walker? I was an idiot for trusting him, but I was hurt and alone. Alone, as in thinking I was the last human being in the freaking universe. And majorly mind-screwed because I had already killed one innocent person, and this person, this Evan Walker, didn't end my life when he could have. He saved it. So when the bells went off, I ignored them. Plus, it didn't hurt. Help? That he was impossibly gorgeous and equally impossibly obsessed with making me feel like I mattered more to him than he did to himself. From bathing me, to feeding me, to teaching me how to kill, to telling me I was the one thing he had left worth dying for, to proving it all by dying for me. He began as Evan, woke up 13 years later to find out he wasn't, then woke again, he told me, when he saw himself through my eyes. He found himself in me, and then I found him in me, and I was in him, and there was no space between us. He began by telling me everything I wanted to hear and ended telling me the things I needed to. The principal weapon to eradicate the human hangers-on were the humans themselves. And when the last of the infested were dead, Vosh and company would pull the plug on the 5th wave. Purge over. House clean and ready to move in. When I told Ben and Ringer all this, minus the part about Evan being inside me a bit too nuanced for Parrish, there was a lot of dubious staring and significant looks from which I was painfully excluded. "One of them was in love with you?" Ringer asked when I finished. "Wouldn't that be like us falling in love with a cockroach?"
"Or a mayfly," I shot back. "Maybe they have a thing for insects."
We were meeting in Ben's room. Our first night at the Walker Hotel, as Ringer dubbed it, mostly, I think, to get under my skin. "What else did he tell you?" Ben asked. He was sprawled on the bed. 4 miles from Camp Haven to the hotel, and he looked like he'd just sprinted a marathon. The kid who patched me and Sam up, Dumbo, wouldn't commit when I asked him about Ben. Wouldn't say if he'd get better. Wouldn't say if he'd get worse. Of course, Dumbo was only 12. "Capabilities? Weaknesses?"
"They have no bodies anymore," I said. "Evan told me that it was the only way they could make the journey. Some were downloaded, him, Vosh, the other silencers. Some are still on the mothership, waiting for us to be gone."
Ben rubbed his mouth with the back of his hand.
"The camps were set up to winnow out the best candidates for brainwashing."
"And to dispose of the ones who weren't," I finished.
Once the fifth wave was rolled out, all they had to do was sit back and let the stupid humans do their dirty work. Ringer was sitting by the window, silent as a shadow.
But why use us at all? Ben wondered. Why not download enough of their troops into human bodies to finish us off?
Not enough of them, maybe, I guessed. Or setting up the fifth wave posed the least risk.
What risk?
Shadow Ringer said, breaking her silence. I decided to ignore her. For a lot of reasons, the main one being you engaged with Ringer at your own peril. She could humiliate you with a single word.
You were there, I reminded Ben. You heard Vosh. They'd been watching us for centuries.
But Evan proved that, even with thousands of years to plan, something can still go wrong. I don't think it ever occurred to them that by becoming us, they might actually become us.
Right, Ben said. So how can we use that?
We can't, Ringer answered. There's nothing Sullivan's told us that will help, unless this Evan person somehow survived the blast and can fill in the blanks.
Ben was shaking his head. Nothing could have survived that.
There were escape pods, I said, grasping at the same straw I'd been reaching for since he said goodbye.
Really?
Ringer didn't sound like she believed me.
Then why didn't he put you in one?
I told her. Look, I probably shouldn't tell someone holding a high-powered semi-automatic rifle this, but you're really starting to get on my nerves. She acted surprised.
Why?
We've got to get a handle on this, Ben said sharply, cutting off my answer, which was a good thing. Ringer was holding an M16, and Ben had told me she was the best shot in the camp.
What's the plan? Wait for Evan to show up or run? And if we run, where to?
Cheeks flaming with fever, eyes shining. It's fourth and long with 4 seconds left.
Is there anything else Evan told you that might help? What are they going to do with the cities?
They're not going to blow them up, Ringer said. She didn't wait for me to answer. Then she didn't wait for me to ask how the hell she would know that.
If that was the plan, they would have blown them up first. Over half the world's population lived in urban areas.
So they plan to use them, Ben said.
Because they're using human bodies?
We can't hide in a city, zombie, Ringer said.
Any city.
Why?
Because it isn't safe. Fires, sewage, disease from all the rotting corpses, other survivors who must know by now they're using human bodies. If we want to stay alive as long as possible, we have to keep moving. Keep moving and stay alone as long as possible.
Oh boy, where did I hear that rule before? My head felt light. My knee was killing me. The knee shot by a silencer. My silencer.
I'll find you, Cassie. Don't I always find you?
Not this time, Evan. I don't think so. I sat on the bed next to Ben.
She's right, I said to him. Staying anywhere for more than a few days is not a good idea. Or staying together.
Ringer's words hung in the icy air. Beside me, Ben stiffened. I closed my eyes. Heard that rule, too. Trust no one.
Not going to happen, Ringer, Ben said. I take teacup and pound cake, you take the rest. Our chances double.
Why stop there? I asked her. Why don't we all split up? Our chances quadruple.
Septuple, she corrected me. Well, I'm no math whiz, Ben said, but it seems to me splitting up plays right into their strategy. Isolate, then exterminate.
He gave Ringer a hard look.
Personally, I like the idea of someone having my back.
He pushed himself from the bed and swayed for a second. Ringer told him to lie back down. He ignored her.
We can't stay, but we have nowhere to go. You can't get to nowhere from here, so where do we go?
He asked.
South, Ringer said, as far south as possible.
She was looking out the window. I understood. A decent snow and you're trapped until it thaws. Ergo, get somewhere where it doesn't snow.
Texas? Ben said.
Mexico, Ringer answered.
Or Central America once the water recedes. You could hide in the rainforest for years. I like it, Ben said. Back to nature. There's just one little flaw.
He spread his hands.
We don't have passports.
He watched her, holding the gesture like he was waiting for something.
Ringer looked back at him, expressionless. Ben dropped his hands with a shrug.
You're not serious, I said. This was getting ridiculous. Central America? In the middle of winter, on foot, with Ben hurt and two little kids, we'll be lucky to make it to Kentucky.
Beats hanging around here waiting for your alien prince to come.
That did it. I didn't care if she was holding an M16. I was grabbing a handful of those silky locks and slinging her out that window. Ben saw it coming and stepped between us.
We're all on the same team here, Sullivan. Let's keep it together, okay?
He turned to Ringer.
You're right. He probably didn't make it, but we're gonna give Evan a chance to keep his promise. I'm in no shape for a road trip anyway.
I didn't come back for you and Nugget so we could be the featured guests at a turkey shoot, zombie, Ringer said.
Do what you think is right, but if things get hot, I'm out of here.
I said to Ben, team player.
Maybe you're forgetting who saved your life, Ringer said.
Oh, kiss my ass.
That does it.
Ben boomed in his best quarterback, I'm the guy in charge here voice.
I don't know how we're making it through this unholy mess, but I do know that this is not the way. Stow the crap, both of you. That's an order.
He fell back onto the bed, gasping for air, a hand pressed against his side. Ringer left to find Dumbo, which left Ben and me alone for the first time since our reunion deep in the bowels of Camp Haven.
Something weird, Ben said. You would think, with 99% of us gone, the 2% would get along better.
That would be 1%, Parrish. I started to point that out and then saw him smiling, waiting for me to correct his math, knowing it would be nearly impossible for me to resist. He played with the stereotype of the dumb jock the way someone Sammy's age played with sidewalk chalk, in broad, clumsy strokes.
She's a psycho, I said. Seriously, something's off. You look in her eyes and there's no one there.
He shook his head.
I think there's a lot there. It's just real deep.
He winced, hand tucked in the pocket of that hideous hoodie like he was doing a Napoleon impression, pressing on the bullet wound that Ringer had given him. A wound he asked for. A wound so he could risk everything to save my little brother. A wound that now may cost him his life.
It can't be done, I whispered.
Of course it can, he said.
He laid his hand on top of mine. I shook my head. He didn't understand. I wasn't talking about us. The shadow of their coming fell upon us, and we lost sight of something fundamental within the absolute dark of that shadow. But simply because we couldn't see it didn't mean it wasn't there. My father mouthing to me, run, when he couldn't. Evan pulling me from the belly of the beast before giving himself up to it. Ben plunging into the jaws of hell to snatch Sam from them. There were some things, well, there was probably only one thing, unblemished by the shadow. Confounding. Indefatigable. Undefeatable. They can kill us, even down to the last of us. But they can't kill. Can never kill. What lasts in us.
Cassie, do you want to fly?
Yes, Daddy. I want to fly. Chapter 12. The silver highway that faded into the black. The black seared by starlight unleashed. The leafless trees with arms upraised like thieves caught in the act. My brother's breath congealed in the frigid air as he slept, the window fogging as I breathed. And beyond the frosty glass, beside the silver highway in the searing starlight, a tiny figure darting beneath the upraised arms of the trees. Oh, crap. I launched across the room and smashed into the hall, where Poundcake whipped around, rifle up. Relax, big boy. Then busted into Ben's room, where Dumbo leaned against the windowsill and Ben sprawled on the bed closest to the door. Dumbo stood up, Ben sat up, and I spoke up. Where's Teacup? Dumbo pointed at the bed next to Ben's.
Right here.
Giving me a look like, this crazy chick's lost it. I went to the bed and whipped aside the mound of covers. Ben cursed and Dumbo backed up against the wall, his face turning red.
I swear to God she was just there.
I saw her, I told Ben, outside.
Outside?
He rolled his legs off the side of the bed, grunting with the effort.
On the highway.
Then he understood.
Ringer. She's going after Ringer.
He slapped his open hand on the mattress.
Damn it!
I'll go, Dumbo said. Ben held up his hand.
Pound cake!
He hollered. You could hear the big kid coming. The floor protested his passage. He stuck his head in the room and Ben said,
Teacup took off after Ringer. Go grab her little butt and bring it back here so I can wail on it.
Poundcake lumbered off and the floor went, thanks a lot. Ben was strapping on his holster.
What are you doing? I asked. Taking Poundcake's post until he gets back with that little shit. You stay with Nugget. I mean, Sam. Whoever. We need to pick one name and stick to it.
His fingers were shaking. Fever. Fear. A little of both. Dumbo's mouth opened and closed, but no sound came out. Ben noticed.
At ease, Bo, not your bad.
I'll take the hall, Dumbo said.
You stay here, Sarge. You shouldn't be on your feet.
He rushed from the room before Ben could stop him. Ben, now looking at me with sparkly eyes, fever bright.
I don't think I told you, he said. After we went rogue in Dayton, Vosh dispatched two squads to hunt us down. If they were still in the field when the camp blew...
He didn't finish the thought. Either he thought he didn't need to or he couldn't. He stood up, staggered. I went to him and he threw his arm around my shoulders without embarrassment. There's no nice way to say this. Ben Parrish smelled sick. The sour odor of infection and old sweat. For the first time since I realized he wasn't a corpse, I thought he might be one soon.
Get back in bed, I told him.
He shook his head, then his hand loosed on my shoulder and he fell back, hitting the edge of the mattress with his butt and sliding down to the floor.
Dizzy, he murmured. Go get Nugget and bring him in here with us.
Sam, can we go with Sam? Whenever I heard Nugget, I thought of the McDonald's drive-thru and hot French fries and strawberry banana smoothies and McCafe frappe mochas topped with whipped cream and drizzled with chocolate. Ben smiled, and it broke my heart, that luminous smile on that wasted face.
We'll go with it, he said.
Sam barely sighed when I pulled him from the bed and carried him into Ben's room. I laid him in Teacup's vacated bed, tucked him in, touched his cheek with the back of my hand, an old habit left over from the plague days. Ben was still sitting on the floor, head thrown back, staring at the ceiling. I started toward him and he waved me back.
Window, he gasped. Now we're blind on one side. Thanks a lot, Teacup.
Why would she take off like...
Ever since Dayton, she's been latched onto Ringer like a pilot fish.
All I ever saw them do is fight. Thinking of the chess brawl, the coin smacking Teacup in the head, and I hate your fucking guts. Ben chuckled.
It's a thin line.
I glanced down at the parking lot. The asphalt shone like onyx. Latched onto her like a pilot fish. I thought of Evan, lurking behind doors and around corners. I thought of the unblemished thing, the thing that lasts. And I thought the only thing with the power to save us also had the power to slay us.
You really shouldn't be on the floor like that, I scolded him. It's warmer up on the bed. A half of a half of a half of a degree, right. This is nothing, Sullivan. A head cold next to the plague.
You had the plague?
Oh, yeah. Refugee camp outside Wright-Patterson. After they took over the base, they hauled me in, pumped me full of antivirals, then put a rifle in my hand and told me to go kill some people. How about you?
A crucifix clutched in a bloody hand. You can either finish me or help me. The soldier behind the beer coolers was the first. No. The first was the guy who shot Crisco in a pit of ashes. That's two. And then there were the silencers. The one I shot right before I found Sam, and the one right before Evan found me. Four, then. Was I missing somebody? The bodies pile up and you lose track. Oh, God, you lose track. I've killed people, I said softly.
I meant the plague.
No, my mom.
How about your dad?
Different kind of plague, I said. He glanced over his shoulder at me.
Vosh. Vosh murdered him.
I told him about Camp Ashpit, the Humvees and big flatbed full of troops, the surreal appearance of the school buses.
Just the kids, room only for the little ones.
The gathering of the rest in the barracks and Dad sending me with my first victim to find Crisco. Then Dad in the dirt, Vosh towering over him while I hid in the woods, and Dad mouthing, run.
Weird that they didn't put you on a bus, Ben said. If the point was to build an army of brainwashed kids.
I saw mostly little kids, Sam's age, some even younger.
At camp, they separated anyone under 5, kept them in the bunker.
I nodded. I found them. In the safe room, their faces lifted up to mine as I hunted for Sam.
Which makes you wonder, why keep them?
Ben said.
Unless Vosh expects a very long war.
The way he said it, as if he doubted that that was the reason. He drummed his fingers on the mattress.
What the hell is going on with Teacup? They should be back by now.
I'll go check, I said.
Like hell you will. This is turning into every horror movie ever made, you know? Getting picked off one by one. 5 more minutes.
We fell silent, listening. But there was only the wind whispering in the poorly sealed window and the constant undercurrent of rats scratching in the walls. Teacup was obsessed with them. I listened to hours of her and Ringer plotting their demise. That annoying, lecturing tone of Ringer's explaining how the population was out of control. The hotel had more rats than we had bullets.
Rats,
Ben said as if he read my mind.
Rats, rats, rats. Hundreds of rats. Thousands of rats. More rats than us now. Planet of the rats.
He laughed hoarsely. Maybe he was delirious.
You know what's been bugging the hell out of me? Vosh telling us they've been watching us for centuries. Like, how is that possible? Oh, I get how it's possible, but I don't get why they didn't attack us then. How many people were on Earth when we built the pyramids? Why would you wait until there are 7 billion of us spread out over every continent with technology a little more advanced than spears and clubs? You like a challenge? The time to exterminate the vermin in your new house isn't after the vermin outnumber you.
What about Evan? He say anything about that? I cleared my throat. He said they were divided over whether to exterminate us.
Huh. So maybe they debated it for 6,000 years? Dicked around because nobody could make up his mind until someone said, oh, what the hell, let's just off the bastards.
I don't know, I don't have the answers. I was feeling a little defensive, as if knowing Evan meant I should know everything.
Vosh could have been lying, I guess, Ben mused. I don't know, to get in our heads, mess with us. He messed with me from the start.
He looked at me, then looked away.
Shouldn't admit this, but I worshipped the guy. I thought he was like...
He twirled his hand in the air, searching for the words.
The best of us.
His shoulders began to shake. At first, I thought it must be the fever, and then I thought it could be something else. So I left my spot by the window and went to him. For guys, breaking down is a private thing. Never let them see you cry. Means you're weak, means you're soft, a baby, a wuss. Not very manly and all that BS. I couldn't imagine the pre-arrival Ben Parrish crying in front of anyone, the guy who had everything, the boy who all the other boys wanted to be, the one who broke others' hearts and never suffered his own to be broken. I sat beside him. I didn't touch him. I didn't speak. He was where he was, and I was where I was. Sorry, he said. I shook my head. Don't be. He wiped the back of his hand against one cheek, then the other cheek.
You know what he told me? Well, more like promised. He promised he would empty me. He would empty me and fill me up with hate.
But he broke that promise. He didn't fill me with hate. He filled me with hope.
I understood. In the safe room, a billion upraised faces populating the infinite, and the eyes that sought mine, and the question in those eyes too horrible to put into words. Will I live? It's all connected. The others understood that, understood it better than most of us. No hope without faith, no faith without hope. No love without trust, no trust without love. Remove one, and the entire human house of cards collapses. It was like Vosh wanted Ben to discover the truth, wanted to teach him the hopelessness of hope. And what could be the point of that? If they wanted to annihilate us, why didn't they just go ahead and annihilate us? There must be a dozen ways to wipe us out quickly, but they drew it out in five waves of escalating horror. Why? Up to now, I always thought that the others felt nothing toward us except disdain with maybe a little disgust mixed in, the way we feel about rats and cockroaches and bedbugs and other nasty lower forms of life. Nothing personal, humans, but you gotta go. It never occurred to me that it could be entirely personal, that simply killing us isn't enough. They hate us, I said. As much to myself as to him. Ben looked at me, startled. And I looked back at him, scared. There's no other explanation. They don't hate us, Cassie. He said gently, the way you talk to a frightened little kid. We just had what they want. No. Now my cheeks were wet with tears. The fifth wave had one explanation and only one. Any other possible reason was absurd. This isn't about ripping the planet away from us, Ben. This is about ripping us. Chapter 13.
That's it, Ben said. Time's up.
Then he was up, but he didn't get very far. Halfway to his feet before plopping down hard on his butt. I put a hand on his shoulder. I'll go. He smacked his thigh with his palm.
Can't let it happen, he muttered as I opened the door and poked my head into the hallway.
Can't let what happen? Losing Teacup and Pound Cake? Losing all of us one by one? Losing the battle against his injuries? Or losing the war in general? The hall was empty. First Teacup, then Pound Cake, now Dumbo. We were disappearing faster than campers in a slasher movie. Dumbo, I called softly. The ridiculous name echoed in the cold, stagnant air. My mind raced through the possibilities. Least likely to most. Somebody quietly neutralized him and stashed his body. He was captured. He saw or heard something and went to investigate. He had to pee. I lingered in the doorway for a couple of seconds in case the last possibility was true. When the hall stayed empty, I stepped back into the room. Ben was upright, checking the magazine of his M16.
Don't make me guess, he said. Never mind, I don't need to guess.
Stay here with Sam, I'll go.
He shuffled to a stop an inch from my nose. Sorry, Sullivan. He's your brother.
I stiffened. The room was freezing, my blood was colder. His voice was hard, flat, without any feeling at all. Zombie. Why do they call you Zombie, Ben? Then he smiled, a very real, very Ben Parrish-y smile.
Those guys out there, they're all my brothers.
He sidestepped me and stumbled toward the door. The situation was escalating quickly from impossibly dangerous to dangerously impossible. I couldn't see any other way. I scrambled over Ben's bed and grabbed Sam by the shoulders, shook him hard. He woke up with a soft cry. I slammed my hand over his mouth to stop the noise. Sam's, listen. Something's wrong. I pulled the Luger from the holster and pressed it into his little hands. His eyes widened with fear and something that unnervingly resembled joy. Ben and I have to check it out. Put on the night latch. You know what a night latch is?
Big-eyed nod.
And put a chair under the knob. Look through the little hole. Don't let... Did I need to spell out everything? Look, Sam's, this is important. Very important. Very important.
You know how we tell the good guys